number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg down. Smack on the ankle.
Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Continuing through the night tonight here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for making us part of your evening. I am still kind of battling a little bit of a cold. I'm getting through it, though. I drank a lot of hot tea today, more hot tea than I need. I woke up this morning in kind of a panic because I lost my voice. And my wife said, just drink a tea. You'll be fine. And sure enough, it kind of came back. But this morning, I sounded like I was gargling razor blades. It was awful. I was like, I can't. I don't know what happened. It was all dry and gross. But, you know, it came through. Weather where I live has been weird. It's supposed to be freezing cold. It's not. It's warm. It's still humid. It's just kind of icky. So it's kind of driving a lot of people to the sick bed this holiday season. But again, thanks for joining us on a Monday Night Football. The Denver Broncos came from behind tonight and beat the Cincinnati Bengals. So now the AFC picture, we've been talking about this tonight, a little bit wide open. A lot of teams with some problems. Most teams have some injuries to deal with, but it's starting to shape out a little bit. The New England Patriots control their own destiny for home field advantage throughout the playoffs. The Kansas City Chiefs can still win the AFC West with a win at a Denver loss. Denver could be a 2 seed or it could be a wild card team based on next week. The Houston Texans not quite clinched, but pretty much are locked into it. They win, they're in. If an Indianapolis loss to Tennessee should happen, they could still get in even if they lose to Jacksonville. There's a number of possibilities all playing themselves out in the AFC. NFC, a little bit more tight. There's no more teams on the outside looking in. The Atlanta Falcons were that last team that was vying for a chance to still keep themselves alive for the playoffs. They didn't get in as Minnesota defeated the New York Giants, sort of ending any possibility for the Atlanta Falcons. The divisions are kind of still up in the air in terms of home field advantage, but the teams are set. The AFC, the Pittsburgh Steelers are still trying to get in. The Indianapolis Colts are still trying to get in. So this has been a very weird season in terms of injuries, in terms of teams and the ups and downs. And one of the things that when you think about what has happened in the 2015 season in the NFL is you have to sort of always, you have to come to the notion that you have to be patient in this league, that you can go through real highs and lows, but in the end, steady the ship. Look at the big picture. I kid you not, a week ago, as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, a week ago, I was on cloud nine. They had just beaten the Denver Broncos. They had just come from behind to do it. They put up yet another 30-point-plus performance. They looked unbeatable. They looked like a team that could fix their problems. Again, buying into the whole narrative of this is the team you don't want to face. They're too explosive. In one week, they went from that's a team nobody wants to face to they're not even getting in. They probably won't get in. Think about the Denver Broncos. They get on that plane back to Pittsburgh. They don't even know what's going on. They've got quarterback problems. Once again, the offense stalled when it was clicking. They scored all these points in the first half against the Steelers. Pittsburgh makes some adjustments, and Brock Osweiler can't do anything. Given time and time again in that game against the Steelers to move the team, he couldn't do it. So now here's Denver. Oh my gosh, we have a quarterback problem. And we're playing the Cincinnati Bengals, and we could be out of the playoffs if we lose two games. If we lose to the Bengals, which could happen, and lose to San Diego, which could happen, we may not get into the playoffs. And guess what? A week later, one game, they're a team that could be the number one overall seed in the AFC. And if not that, then a number two seed. Right now, they're a 2 seed. You just got to be patient. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, the Carolina Panthers, not only the best team in the NFC, best team in the NFL. How many of you right now, honestly, would put your cards on the table for the Arizona Cardinals if I asked you that question? Based on what you saw against the Green Bay Packers. It's been that kind of season. Be patient. The NFC East, anybody's game. Washington wraps it up. Right? Minnesota Vikings struggling. Get their act together. Now they're in the playoffs. It's that kind of, it's just been that kind of year. Be patient. Injuries can occur. Fortunes can change. 1 week you're feeling great. The next week it's all been taken away from you. That's how weird this league is. And that's been this season. In a nutshell, this season. 800-777-2907. And in case you just joined us, our overall question tonight of something I want to do this week as we wind down the year is your best story of 2015. Your I love sports moment. It could be one game, one night. It can be a story, an overall feel-good moment of, you know, a couple of weeks, a run through a tournament or something along those lines. But the one moment where you went, man, it's great to be a sports fan. Adam and I were talking about a couple. I said American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. But my number one sports story of 2015 was Jordan Spieth. As a golfer, I was so impressed. I was a little envious of his ability to win the Masters and the U.S. Open at 21. I don't remember what I was doing at 21, but it wasn't that. It wasn't flying on private jets around the world, winning golf tournaments. But it was really fun to watch this kid play the kind of golf and be captivated by the kind of golf that we saw back when Tiger did it in 2000. Maybe not as dominant and maybe not as making a statement like Tiger did, because Pebble Beach was just something I'd never ever seen before. But it was, I couldn't wait to watch him play. I couldn't wait to watch the British Open, even the PGA. Couldn't wait. Also, the emergence of Steph Curry. It was just a fun NBA Finals. It really was. Two good storylines. A likable team in Golden State and a team in Cleveland that was trying to give a city a real shot at another title. You really felt that. You know, when they did the Sports Center from Cleveland and they showed the crowd, I think we had fun, a little too much fun with Matthew Dellavedova, though. That was probably the funnest part of the NBA Finals, was watching him grow from superstar to, hey, where did he go? Whatever happened to him? That was pretty quick. But LeBron, too. I mean, in those NBA Finals. Look, LeBron didn't have Kyrie Irving, and yet that game, too, was one of the best performances I've seen from an NBA player. So your best stories of 2015, hit us up on the phone lines, 800-777-2907. If you want to share yours, you can do so on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. We already had one in for Jeff Gordon making the chase for the championship in his final run at NASCAR, his importance to that sport, and was able to compete for a championship in the final race of the year. Pretty good story. I failed to mention the Women's World Cup soccer team. I want to mention that because my daughter plays soccer and she loved that team like most young girls around the country do. And it was great to share that as a father, to see her idolize those female athletes winning the World Cup. I got to take her to Chattanooga to see the victory tour, although it was brief because it rained and stormed and then they kicked us out of the stadium, only to find out that the game hadn't been canceled, despite what the security guard had told us. Big downer. One of the worst moments of 2015 for me was driving home from Chattanooga going, did we just leave a stadium too early? I paid good money for tickets and was told the game was canceled, only to find out it wasn't canceled. By that time, being too far away to turn around. All right, 800-777-2907 is the number. It is Tony D on the nighttime here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Coming up, a strange NBA suspension. That's next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
You can tweet the show at Tony D Radio. Also like us on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Where would you put the 2015 Chicago Cubs on the list of top stories of the year? Where would you put the Cubs, Adam?
I would put them probably somewhere, just running through stories, probably in like the 6-7 range.
Yeah, it would have been better if they were in the World Series, even if they didn't win the World Series. But if they had done, like, there are two things with the Cubs' curse. One is getting to the World Series. They haven't done that since 1945. And obviously winning the World Series 1908. So if they had broken one of those, that would have been cool.
Because I mean, I would put the Warriors, the Triple Crown, Jordan Spieth, the women's soccer team, Serena Williams is something we haven't talked about.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Serena Williams.
So I mean, that's five right there, and that's just off the top of my head without really even thinking what else went on.
See, Serena Williams is an interesting story in 2015 because I don't mind rooting for the underdog. I don't root for the underdog all the time. I'm not one of those big. I love seeing upsets. I don't necessarily need to see upsets all the time. But I was not rooting for that girl from Italy. I was like, come on, Serena, let's go. What are you doing?
Right.
Stop this. Like, I was watching that match, and I only watched it really because I saw in the beginning that she was leading, and I kind of ignored it because it was only a semifinal match, and I think it was on a Friday, and then I went to Twitter, and Twitter was really going crazy because this woman was climbing right back into this match against Serena, so I was like, I'm going to throw it on, and I was watching it going, oh no, she's not going to win, and she's not going to win the Grand Slam, and this is not going to be a good, great moment in the sports world of 20, like, I mean, all due respect, but I don't necessarily need to see, you know, David beat Goliath all the time.
And you know what else I'd definitely put in front of the Cubs is the first year, which was great, of the college football playoff.
I agree completely. I love the fact that the playoff is working.
Yes.
When, you know why? Because I was so sick of people telling me, or having the powers that be tell me over and over again that it was never going to work. That, oh, we just can't figure it out, or we're going to destroy the bowls. Or Dan Wetzel wrote that great book, Death to the BCS, which I highly recommend, even now postscript, where, you know, like right now, if you read the book, it's like, well, there's real no sense of urgency. The BCS is dead. But read it anyway. If you can get your hands on a copy, read it anyway, just to see what really goes on in the college football bowl world and what was really preventing a college football playoff. It'll make you angry at people locked into tradition and people locked into money and people locked into payoffs and all that other stuff. It's insane. And over again for years and years and years and years and years, we were told we're never going to get one. You're never going to see one. Don't worry. You know, take it out of your mind. And then finally somebody or some group of people said, no, we really could make some money off of this. Let's put one together. I just don't want them to go crazy, man. I just don't want them to go 16 team on me, okay?
I love four. I think four is perfect.
Four is great. I do too.
Four is
I do
awesome because it keeps the regular season every week being, you know, well, we can't lose this game. And then if you lose a game, you're like, well, man, what do we got to do to get back in this? But if you go to eight, then it's like, okay, I lost, but yeah, we'll definitely get back in this.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I like four. I like the fact that not every team gets in, or every conference, I mean, gets in.
I'm fine. I'm fine with four. I'm totally cool. I just don't want them to get greedy and crazy and have this turn into something that... Because, look, I don't get a lot of regular seasons that mean much, and I love the fact that college football regular season means a lot.
Yeah.
I still love the fact that in October, I'm pacing like a madman up and down the floor going, oh, come on. Oh, I'm sorry. When South Carolina was good, I should say, which was a very, very small blip of time. So, you know, it's not like I've got that every year, but also rooting against Florida. I mean, when Florida would be winning some key game and I'm going, oh, come on, really? I got to put up with this? No, but I love the fact the regular season means. I love those nights where I'm watching like Stanford lose and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to upset everything. Something like that, or USC losing, or something along those lines. So I like four. I'm glad. I'm glad you brought that up because the college football playoff was a ton of fun. especially with Ohio State. Listen, one of the things I didn't get to ask Paul Konenek last hour was, you remember when it didn't even, Ohio State hadn't even won the national championship yet. They were still going to play Oregon. But there was already a huge dent in the SEC armor because of Ohio State's win over Alabama. And I wonder what a second dent by a Big Ten team would do to the SEC, or what it would mean for the conference to have that. If you could have two teams in the Big Ten beat Alabama in consecutive years in the college football playoff, what would that mean for the Big Ten?
I think it would mean a ton, because especially with the emergence of Michigan coming also, to have those two teams, Michigan State and Ohio State, who will still be up there towards the top of the rankings every year, and then have Michigan coming behind them as a third team that will be a top 10 team, you know, continually for the next few years. I mean, it's huge for the Big Ten if Michigan State can beat Bama.
It was not that long ago. I kid you not. I know this sounds like a hyperbole, but I kid you not. There were people in the South saying, man, they don't even play football up North.
Right.
I mean, it's not even football. It's like something different. It's so bad. The best team in the Big Ten would only win two games in the SEC. I mean, this is the kind of conversations people in the South and Alabama and Florida and Georgia and Mississippi were having. Oh, the best team in the Big Ten couldn't even be competitive amongst our worst teams in our conference. And then in one game, there was a dent in the armor of the SEC, and here's a chance for the conference to put another dent into that. And you're right, with the emergence of Michigan and some of the other schools that are coming up in that conference, Penn State, there is a real sense that there is good football being played across the country, and people better start paying attention, because this is not a southeastern-centric college football world we live in, where it's them and everybody else is just picking up the scraps off the table. That there's legitimately good football that's being played. And it would, I'm looking forward to this game. I really am. Now, you know what? I'm not so much Oklahoma-Clemson, because I think the Sooners are going to roll over the Tigers, and it's not even going to be close. I can only dream. Give me that at least. 800-777-2907. All right, let's talk some NBA. We just got done the Christmas games. What does it mean? The Golden State Warriors are, again, beating everybody. But what about the San Antonio Spurs? What about the Oklahoma City Thunder? We'll talk to Michael Pena next from Sports on Earth on the NBA, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loans Studios.
And back to Tony D.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. Let's take a look at the National Basketball Association. We just had five games on Christmas Day. Where do we stand in the NBA? Michael Pena joins us from Sports on Earth to talk about the association. How are you, Michael?
Good. How are you?
Good. All right. So, like I said earlier, we had some big games on Christmas Day. The big one, of course, Cleveland and Golden State. Michael, from what you saw and where we're at this season, what did you take away from that particular game, Warriors and Cavaliers? Anything in particular between those two teams?
Well, it's obviously earlier in the year, and both these teams are arguably the best teams in their conference. I think it's too early to look at Cleveland right now because of the injury problems that they've had and how they're kind of acclimating Kyrie Irving into their rotation to really make any sound judgments on them. LeBron James hasn't really looked his normal self, and he's getting up there in age. He's on the wrong side of 30. His birthday, I believe, is coming up. And he hasn't been hitting jumpers. So it's really tough to judge that team right now and really get an accurate grasp. And that the Golden State Warriors are just an absolute juggernaut and one of the best basketball teams I think I've ever seen. So they're good, and they're the defending champions. But with Cleveland, I think we still need a few months to kind of gauge the waters there.
When you look at the Eastern Conference, and again, it's early, but we're seeing a bunch up between the top eight teams. There's only three games that separate one from eight. And again, like I said, it's early. But are there teams that you like? Are there teams in the Eastern Conference that you're saying, hey, they're building something really nice there?
Yeah, I mean, you could honestly pick any of the teams in 2 through 7 right now and kind of make a case for them finishing second overall. Atlanta's been there, done that. I think they're just kind of coasting right now, figuring some things out. They have a few injury problems. Thiago Splitter's got a calf strain, I think. And you have the Indiana Pacers. Paul George just kind of simmered off a little bit from his hot start. But they're kind of familiarizing themselves with small ball. They look pretty good. And then you have the Chicago Bulls. Who've had a few impressive wins of late after kind of struggling a little bit last week. They were in the headlines for things you wouldn't really want to be in the headlines for. They're still adjusting to their new coach. And the Boston Celtics, who are on a 4-game win streak, and really they just got Marcus Smart back, and Kelly Olynyk looks like a real, really good NBA player right now. So honestly, any of those teams, and then there's Toronto Raptors, Miami Heat, et cetera. You can really pick any of those teams out of the hat right now, and any of them could finish second overall, I think.
And we go to the West, where you mentioned about Golden State, but Oklahoma City at 21-10 this season. When you look at the Thunder this year, and they've got healthy, they've got Durant and Westbrook, and they're doing the things that Durant and Westbrook have done. But is Billy Donovan, does he have any sort of fingerprints on this team, or is it the same Thunder, just a different coach?
I don't know if the coach really matters. Maybe that's not the right word, but this team is only going to go so far. Their two best players are going to take them. Their playing style seems to be reflective of what it was under Scotty Brooks. There hasn't really been too many changes stylistically, and then with the rotation, I mean, it's almost the same group that they had last season. So it's basically just if Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook can stay healthy and play at an all-NBA level, then this team will make noise in the playoffs. And, I mean, they're very top-heavy. Their bench has struggled this year. Enes Kanter has been good on offense, terrible on defense, and you can say that about a long list of guys. They're kind of got a bunch of one-dimensional pieces. So if Durant and Westbrook are at the top, then they'll be great.
If you're going to beat a team like Golden State, I guess you would have to be one of the better defensive teams in the league. San Antonio is the best defensive team in the league. Is this a better San Antonio team than we've seen in the last couple of years for Greg Popovich?
I think so, yeah. I actually think that this might be the best Spurs bunch that we've seen ever. Their defense is historically great, as you said, and Kawhi Leonard is one of the five best players in the world right now, and then you have the big three, and they're all playing really well together. They're all Greg Popovich is doing a fantastic job, as he usually does, of managing their minutes and keeping everybody fresh and healthy. And tonight you saw Boban Marjanovic, who's a giant out of nowhere, and he had a great game against the Timberwolves with Duncan on the sidelines. And I haven't even mentioned LaMarcus Aldridge yet, who is a four-time All-Star and looks right at home in San Antonio's system, and he's kind of wowed me with his defense this year, not to mention his ability to kind of isolate in the post and knock down mid-range jumpers. So I really like San Antonio this year. I think this is their most talented bunch, and I would not be shocked or surprised in the slightest that they represented the Western Conference in the finals.
The Houston Rockets struggled early. They fired Kevin McHale. They're at 500 right now. They still have talented players on the roster. But Michael, are their problems real? Are their problems something that they're just going to struggle with all season? I mean, they don't play very good defense. Or is this fixable and the Rockets could be a team that was in the conference championship last year?
Yeah, the Rockets are tough. They basically just didn't try for the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, and you can't really do that in the NBA. So they really struggled out of the gate. But since December 1st, they've actually had the fourth best net rating. So point differential per 100 possessions, only the San Antonio Spurs, Thunder, and Warriors are better. So I don't think you can count out the Rockets right now. I don't know if you can consider them a title contender, but if Dwight Howard stays healthy, if James Harden kind of boosts his efficiency a little bit, and if everyone tries every night, I think they'll be a tough out in the playoffs.
I want to get back to Golden State because I'm with you. I think this is one of the best teams I've seen in a long time. But as far as the way they play, in terms of what we're seeing historically from Golden State, I mean, 28-1, you just don't do that in this league when you have back-to-back nights, when you're traveling, when you don't even know what city you're in half the time. How are the Golden State Warriors, how are they this good? I mean, is it just lack of fatigue? I mean, is it depth off the bench? How are they this good?
Well, that's the magical question, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, their playing style is real interesting. They play extremely fast. They have stout defense, and they move the ball. That and they're probably the best three-point shooting team in NBA history. And when you have Klay Thompson and you have Steph Curry, I mean, no lead is enough. And these guys are playing with surreal confidence, surreal motivation to kind of silence people who have, whatever, wronged them, disrespected them in the off season, didn't think that their championship run was legitimate, whatever that means. I don't know. I think this team is extremely mentally tough. Draymond Green has developed into one of the 10 most important players of his generation, and they have the best player in the world right now. So, I mean, I don't really know if there's really an answer to what they're doing. It's just kind of really fun to watch, and I don't know how you stop them.
Absolutely. I'm with you. But the thing that impresses me the most is, and I think, you know, you've watched so many NBA games in your career, you know, teams just take nights off. You know, they're on back-to-backs, or they're just have an off night, so they just want to get out of town and they just want to get back home or whatever. And so you just see sometimes these lackadaisical efforts from teams who just want to pace themselves a little bit. And Golden State has none of these issues. They don't seem to be pacing themselves at all. They seem to be playing every single game with the intensity of any other game on their schedule.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And it really helps when you have a deep roster. So, I mean, Festus Ezeliya has really become a legitimate NBA player. He's now, I would say he's better than Andrew Bogut, which is kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, they've just plugged kind of Brandon Rush into the starting lineup when Harrison Barnes goes out, and they don't seem to really skip a beat. Andre Iguodala is a fantastic player, the reigning finals MVP, and all these guys kind of orbit Steph Curry and Draymond. And those two are extremely special players, and probably the most. It's really difficult to get hyperbolic with this team. You can't really praise them too much because of historic. I mean, they've already won the title, and now this year they ran out and they're 28-1. So you can't say too many good things about them, and they're a joy. And it's like I said earlier, it's really difficult to even explain how they're doing it. They're just very, very, very special.
Michael Pina again joins us from Sports on Earth on the NBA. Great talking hoops with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You got it. And that's the thing about Golden State, because, you know, we've seen good teams, right? We've seen teams that are built around stars. We've seen, you know, teams with two or three stars, teams that are well coached. If you've been following this league for years and years, but I haven't seen anything like this where every night they play hard every single night. Every night. And it's amazing they almost went 7-0 on their road trip, only losing on a back-to-back situation in Milwaukee, coming off a double overtime win against Boston the night before. Again, Greg Popovich rests guys, paces guys. He's gotten in trouble for doing that, but understands it's not a marathon. I mean, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Get to April. You got to get healthy, got to get to April. Then you're going to run through a very difficult tournament. And Golden State is on this mission, it seems. And because, look, how many teams have we seen that have, like, it's easy to say, well, they have Steph Curry, they have Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. We've seen teams with good players. We've seen teams with three good players before. And I don't think I've seen anybody go 28-1. Right? It's amazing. It absolutely is amazing. All right, 800-777-2907. We'll continue to look at Monday Night Football and the ramifications of Denver beating Cincinnati tonight in overtime. And what does that mean for the AFC? We'll process all that coming up next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, let's prime this thing up for the AFC. The New England Patriots control their own destiny for the number one overall seed. They just need to beat the Miami Dolphins. The Denver Broncos can win the number one seed with the win over San Diego and a Patriots loss. However, they could actually fall out of the number two spot by a loss to the Chargers and a Kansas City win. They're red hot. They've won 9 in a row. The Chiefs play the Oakland Raiders. If the Chiefs win and the Broncos lose, guess who wins the AFC West? Yes, the formerly 1-5. Kansas City Chiefs. The Houston Texans and the Indianapolis Colts, this gets a little weird. All the Texans have to do is win, and they win. That's not the weird part. Indianapolis needs a win and a Texans loss and a lot of other things to go their way based on strength of schedule. Like, it goes down a couple of notches in the tiebreaker. So it's not just Colts win, Texans lose. They need a couple of other games to go their way. So Texans just control their own destiny, but they could lose and still win the division, even if the Colts win. What am I missing? Let's see. The Jets are in with the win over Buffalo. The Steelers are in with a win over the Browns and a Jets loss to Buffalo. And I think I got it. I think that's it. I think that's all she wrote in the AFC. So tonight's game, it's solidified a couple of things, but a lot of things are still up for grabs. We're not even sure who's in yet. We know a couple of teams, but not all of them. All right. Did you hear about Matt Barnes getting suspended by the NBA? Oh, yes, you did.
I don't understand it. It's confusing to me.
This is the strangest story. I kind of had to do a double take because I was like, where was I, in a barn? I totally missed this a couple of weeks ago in October. So Matt Barnes of the Memphis Grizzlies has been suspended 2 games by the NBA. Why? Because he got in an altercation with Derek Fisher, the head coach of the New York Knicks. Now, just before you're thinking, oh, it must have been a game that they played against the Knicks, because that was my first thought. And since I follow the Memphis Grizzlies living in Nashville, I was like, I don't remember the Knicks playing the Memphis Grizzlies, but let me just check the schedule to see if it was a game I missed. Sure enough, I went through the schedule, and the Memphis Grizzlies have not played the Knicks yet this season. So I went, oh, so when did this take place? Oh, I might as well click on the story and read it. Here's what happened. Matt Barnes will be suspended for the incident in October in which the Grizzlies player physically attacked Knicks coach and Barnes' former teammate with the LA Lakers, Derek Fisher. Why? Because Fisher is dating Barnes' estranged wife, Gloria. Barnes agreed to accept the suspension, by the way. Why wouldn't you? This is what was reported in the New York Post. This is where it gets really fun. But when Barnes learned that Fisher was at his former home with Gloria, he drove 95 miles to L.A. to beat the beep out of Fisher, sources said. Derek was in Gloria's backyard with about 10 people having a bonfire on Saturday. Derek's separated from his wife, and there's a relationship with Gloria. Apparently, again, according to the sources, Barnes's children were in the house. Fisher reportedly suffered a few scratches, but one child said, "Mommy's friend Derek is over," and I guess that's what set off Matt Barnes. He drove 95 miles. Do you know how far that is to take care of some business?
He must have been hot.
I used to do auto racing track announcing for a track in Pueblo, Colorado. I lived 100 miles from the track, okay? So it was kind of a commitment to do this. So I would drive from Denver to Pueblo, 100 miles one way. Pay was pretty good. But that's a long time to stew about something. Now, I've had to leave to go to the track after arguments with my wife, where it's a Saturday and I got to get going and we're fighting over something. And I'm just like, I got to go. And she's just like, no, you will not leave. No. And I'm like, I'm leaving. And I'd got in the car and I would drive. And I would be bothered by that argument. But by the time I got to the track, I'd be like, well, I've kind of cooled down a little bit. You know, I probably should call and apologize and straighten it out. Because I was on the road for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. This guy drove 95 miles in to L.A., probably in traffic. Probably took him a lot longer. Still stewing over Derek Fisher and couldn't wait to get there to get into an altercation with Derek Fisher. No wonder he took the suspension. Oh, Matt Barnes. He's one of the few players, NBA players, I've ever interviewed on this show. He was pretty good, too. I wish I knew this information when I talked to him. I don't know what I'd have done if I did. How do you think the NBA handled the suspension? Like, Matt, here's what we're going to do. We're going to suspend you, and Derek's not getting anything because actually we don't find he did anything wrong. Except date a woman you used to marry that could date again. I wonder if he took that well.
He has to. I mean,
right? I can't wait till Memphis faces the Knicks.
Oh, that's gonna be fun. That's must see TV.
It's got to be, right? Every time he goes down the court and hits a shot, turns to the bench.
Oh, you know, that's for glory. Like one of those errant throws or passes to somebody that's not standing along the Knicks sideline.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, trying to catch Fisher off guard and pop him right in the face with the ball.
I just saw a picture of Gloria. She's a very, very attractive lady.
Yes, she is.
Very attractive. No wonder Derek Fisher's like, whatever. I'm not worried about this.
Right.
She is pretty. Very pretty. He drove 95 miles, man, to go beat up Derek Fisher. Here's the source from the Post. The Post said Barnes became incensed when his six-year-old twin sons, Carter and Isaiah, called him to tell him that Fisher was at the house. Barnes went crazy, got in his car and went to the house and after Fisher. Matt then drove down to beat the crap out of him. Fisher and Barnes were teammates on the LA Lakers for two seasons. Barnes is a forward who is known as an enforcer for his aggressive style of play. Found Fisher, about 10 other people around a bonfire. And the fight erupted at 11:45 p.m. Well, Adam Silver, I wonder if he was beyond angry. Or was he like, oh, God, really? Of all the things I thought I would have to do as commissioner, I've got to play divorce court between two people in my league? Did you date his wife? Yes. Is she allowed to date people? Yes. Did you go attack him? Yes. All right. Ugh. Two games. Boom. Oh, get me something real. Poor Adam Silver. Derek Fisher can't coach and apparently he can't keep his dating life secret. God, what a great story that was.
You gotta work on keeping those kids quiet.
You know, don't you think, right? Like, when my kids were little, secrets we keep from mommy. It's like the best game around. I lost my kid in an amusement park once. Same thing. My wife was upset. I was upset at my wife because we were going to an amusement park and my wife said to me, now don't lose our son. And I said, what kind of dad do you think I am? I'd lose my son at an amusement park. Sure enough, I lost my son at the amusement park. And so I said, hey, this is something we keep from mommy, right? 2 seconds after we got home, daddy lost me at the amusement park. I should have just bought the kid ice cream or given him like $100.
Something. Yeah. You got to bribe
something.
Him.
Derek Fisher doesn't know how to play around with, you know, make sure kids keep quiet. Good job, Matt Barnes. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.